मोकम करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातं वन्दे श्रीगुरो दीनतारिणं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्य ईश्वरम्. So, I was hearing from the Bhakti Viksha leaders that most of you all hear these lectures very, very attentively. That makes me very nervous. In fact, I've heard that many people, many of you, you have changed your dinner time. Many of you take break from your office work at this time for 1.5 hours. And Matajis, they are hurrying up their cooking so that they finish off cooking, and sometimes they forcefully feed their kids also so that they get freed at this time. Now, this all makes me very nervous. In fact, my lectures are not worth it's so much of endeavor that you're putting. In fact, I pray that all of you all get much better association so that you all can get delivered faster. But anyways, now we don't have options, so you have to bear with me for some more time. So let's read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Text 50. Please repeat. Lubdako vipine kasche pakshinam nirmitontaka vitatya jalam vidadhe tatra tatra pralobhayan. There was once a hunter who lured birds with food and captured them after spreading a net. He lived as if appointed by death, personified as the killer of the birds. So hope everyone knows where are we. Hope you all are there with me. So Parikshit Maharaj asked a question to Shukadeva Goswami. It all started from there. So Parikshit Maharaj asked this question, is Lord partial? And then Shukadeva Goswami started speaking. And then Shukadeva Goswami started narrating a discussion that was happening between Narada Muni and Yudhishthir Maharaj. Yudhishthir Maharaj had seen Shishupal entering the body of Krishna. So Yudhishthir Maharaj said, how is this possible? And then that discussion started. And Narada Muni, towards the end of the discussion, started speaking about Hiranyakashipu. And then when the talk about Hiranyakashipu started, so at that time, Narada Muni started speaking what Hiranyakashipu started speaking to his mother, Diti, to his sister-in-law, that is Vrishabhanu, and his brother's sons. So that talk now started, and Narada Muni is describing the talk. And then Hiranyakashipu started talking about another incident that happened. That was the wives of Suyagya, when they all were surrounding the dead body of Suyagya after his death. And they all were crying out. At that time, Yamraj came. And there was a discussion between Yamraj and these wives, where Yamraj is speaking as a small boy. And now Yamraj is going to speak about another incident that has happened. So you can imagine first Shukadeva Goswami speaking what Narada Muni is speaking. Narada Muni is speaking what Hiranyakashipu is speaking. Hiranyakashipu is speaking what Yamraj is speaking. And Yamraj is now going to speak about someone else. And now this time it's not a human being. This time it's a bird. So let's see now where this particular pastime takes us. It's a very, very intense pastime. Let's see what Krishna wants to reveal us today. Text 51. So here in text 50, we understand there was a hunter. And what was the hunter doing? He would put nice food or some grains, and then he would put the net. And the birds would come and they would get entangled in that net. And that's how it would capture the birds and kill them. So here, this hunter was representing the death personified for whom? For all the birds. Text 51. While wandering in the forest, the hunter saw a pair of Kulinga birds. Of the two, the female was captivated by hunter's lure. Now you can see, so there's a couple. Now this couple is not human couple, it's a bird couple. And there it belongs to a species called Kulinga. You can, I don't know how they look, but there are some birds. And then the female bird was there. She got allured to whatever was put on the net. Now what happens next? Let's see. O queens of Suyagya, the male Kulinga bird, seeing his wife put into the greatest danger in the grip of providence, became very unhappy. Because of affection, the poor bird, being unable to release her, began to lament for his wife. So now the situation is, the male Kulinga bird is sitting on the tree, on the branch, and the female Kulinga bird, she is there, somewhere down. So, okay, I just said that he's sitting on the branch, he might be sitting anywhere. So let's imagine that he's sitting on a branch or sitting on the ground, and he's looking at what is happening to the female Kulinga bird. Now she's caught up in the net, and then she's not able to come out of that. And the male Kulinga bird, he cannot do anything. So he's looking at the situation, the distressful situation of the female Kulinga bird or his wife, and he's lamenting. And what is he speaking? That's what is the talk from the next verse onwards. Alas, how merciless is providence. My wife, unable to be helped by anyone, is in such an awkward position and lamenting for me. What will providence gain by taking away this poor bird? What will be the profit? So this is the question that he's asking. So this normally, this question is a very frequent question, frequently asked question to God. Whenever a person goes through a lot of problems, at that time this question is there, why me? Why me? Oh Lord, why me? And at that time, now then we become very, very close to Lord at that time, and we start speaking very closely. Why are you doing this to me? You could have done to someone else. What have I committed? What offense I have committed? What has this small child done to you? What this innocent lady has done to you? Oh Lord, why are you doing this to us? And so on and so forth. So similarly here, the male Kulinga bird is lamenting and he's saying all this. If unkind providence takes away my wife, who is half my body, why should he not take me also? What is the use of my living with half of my body bereaved by loss of my wife? What shall I gain in this way? So in India, I don't think this is a concept which has to be described elaborately. So the wife is called as Ardhangini. Ardha Anga. So basically, so she is half the body of the male. That's what I said. Why? Because so many things, she would do to maintain the body of the husband. So previously, we see this is how the description of females is given in the Vedic times. So they would be at home, and the husband would go out to farm and or some business or whatever. And then wife, she would be waiting. In the morning, she would get up much before than the husband. And then she would cook, and she would not make tea and coffee. She would cook. Yes, she would take bath first, go out and put water in the angan, in the space outside the door. And then she would put rangoli, lit the lamp. So this is Brahma Muhurta time. And then in South India, Suprabhatam is played. So it was played at that time also. Played, it was sung at that time. Now it's played. And then after that, she would go, and then she would wake up the husband by touching the feet of the husband. And then the husband would get up like a royal king. And then he would go take bath. And then immediately he would get engaged in devotional service. He would not be checking his WhatsApp messages and what happened and this and that and mails or whatever. Immediately he would take bath and go and do his daily devotional service, daily worship. And the wife would be busy cooking bhoga. She would get the bhoga, he would offer. And then the wife would serve the husband very nicely. And then after that, the husband would leave for his the farm or for any business or whatever. And then the entire day, the wife, she would be just be engaged thinking, oh, hope my husband is doing well. And she would pray intensely to the Lord that please protect him. And in fact, I have seen my own mother, she would do that. Whenever my father would go out to office, this is in the childhood, immediately she would go in front of the altar and she would offer prayers. And this is, I could witness this, some trace of Vedic culture in my house also. And then, entire day she would be just immersed in thinking about him. And she would be thinking, in the evening, I'll cook this for him, cook that for him, and things like that. And as soon as the time comes when he's about to arrive, she would, decorate herself very nicely. So this is what is recommended in Shastra, that a housewife, you know, she decorates herself very nicely before the husband comes. And then when the husband comes, so at that time, you know, he looks at the beautiful face of the wife and all his tiredness will go away. Yes. And then they'll sit and they'll have a nice talk with each other, and the husband will share what all happened at in the outside world, you know, what all problems he faced, and the wife would hear very attentively as if Bhagavatam class is going on. And then you know, he would go take bath again, he would do devotional service, you know, like chanting, reading or hearing, whatever. And then after completing all that, they both would sit together and have dinner. Right. So in this way, we see that the wife would serve the husband in so many ways, so many ways. So she was called as Ardhangini. And she, in fact, Ardhangini basically means she shares the half of the body of the male. Right. And the male who was there, even he would give a lot of importance, a lot of importance to the female that, okay, you're doing so much for me. You're doing so much for me. So it's like the wife surrenders to the husband and husband surrenders to the wife. Yes. And at the same time, the husband surrenders to Supreme Personality of God. Yes. So complete surrender at Supreme Personality's lotus feet and some surrender at the wife's lotus feet. Right. So in this way, the husband and wife, they would have very tight attachment, you know, a strong attachment with each other. And when it comes to devotees, they would have strong attachment, and in between would be Krishna. So the husband would be attached to Krishna, wife would be attached to Krishna. They both are strongly attached to Krishna, so they both are attached to each other. Right. So in this way, this was the Vedic culture. So the statements that he's making, so why I described all these things, because the statement that he's making would be very difficult for some people to understand. What is half body? Yes. So he is lamenting so much that he's saying that, why don't you take me also? How can I live without, you know, the other part of the body? What is the use of my living with half of my body bereaved by loss of my wife? What shall I gain in this way? What shall I gain in this way? And now, after talking about this, now he's going to talk about his babies. He says, the unfortunate baby birds bereft of their mother are waiting in the nest for her to feed them. They're still very small and have not yet grown their wings. How shall I be able to maintain them? So it is seen, even when it comes to the human babies. So when it comes to the father, so whenever the child would look beautiful, I mean, he's taken bath nicely and then, you know, nicely dressed and nice powder and everything is put. And at that time, he would, you know, take the child and play. Oh, so nice, whatever. Yes. And then he would be playing so nicely. And as soon as he had, the child passes urine or passes stool, and whom the child would be given to? To the mother. Right. And the mother would do everything. The mother would do everything. Okay, if some father is doing all this, please don't take it as an offense. I'm talking about general case. Yes. And then, you know, when it comes to the mother, she would do everything. Right from feeding the milk from her body to cleaning the stool of the baby. Everything, you know, she would do. Everything she would do very nicely. And it is said, and it's very clear also, even in the current situation, I don't know, but not till the generation of our generation, that we were all very much attached to our mothers. Very rarely, you know, there will be someone who will be attached to father. Even today, you know, when we call our parents, and I'm sure most of us do this, we talk more to our mother than the father. Yes. In fact, when it comes to me, I talk to my father once in 3 months or something. And even when we talk with our father, there will not be much to speak, you see. You know, we call and then, you know, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. And then how is your job going? And how is your job going? And other things. And then I think in 2-3 minutes, the call will get over. And with mother, it just goes on 45 minutes, 1 hour, 1.5 hour, 2 hours. It goes on. She has so many topics to speak. So many topics to speak. Yes. So in this way, we see that even today, you know, that, you know, affection is there. That affection is there between the child and the mother. And most of the things, when it comes to the child, the nourishment of the child is taken care of by the mother. But the credit goes to the father. Whose child he is? He is of so-and-so, no, Mr. So-and-so. And then when the child gets, you know, he goes astray, you know, from the right path, he gets into some bad path. Who is his mother? Who is his mother? So mother does that background work No, even without getting any credit from others, because she is so selfless. Her only thing is, I want to nourish my child. That's it. And finally, the father takes away all the credit. Father takes away all the credit at that time, yes. So the nourishment aspect I'm talking about. So the nourishment, when it comes to mothers, you know, they nourish the baby. First, you know, when it comes to physical nourishment, they nourish the baby physically. They would first, from start, when the baby is in the womb, the mother is feeding the baby right in the womb. Then when the baby comes out of the womb, she feeds from her own body. And then when the baby is grown up to eat grains, she cooks with so much of love and affection. I'm sure all the mothers who are hearing me, they would be having tough time. You know, when it comes to cooking, they would be thinking, oh, my son or daughter does not like this, but I have to cook something else also for them, and so on and so forth. So much of natak of the kids will be taken care of by the mothers. And the mothers cannot see the kids just sleeping. Like, suppose, I have done this many times, so I can share. When the kid does not like the dish that is made, he would do some drama that I don't want, I'll not eat. And then you just go to sleep. And the mother, she would prepare something fast, instant, not Maggie, something else. Yes. And then, you know, she would get, and she would wake up. No, no, please have. How can you sleep without eating? So like this, there's tight bonding when it comes to the mother and the child, because the mother takes care of the nourishment of the child, and the child understands the nourishment given by the mother. And even father nourishes, but the father's nourishment is external. So he goes out to the office, and then he comes back, and again goes out, comes back, goes out, comes back. On the weekends, you know, he might get involved in his own personal work. So in this way, you know, when it comes to attachment with the father, it's not that great. Very, very few people have found till date that they have very much great attachment to the father. But most of the time, you know, I see that the kids are very much attached to the mother. Very much attached to the mother. In fact, even when someone wants to join Brahmacharya Ashram to become a monk, the first thought that comes in the mind is what my mother would feel if I leave the family and come. And this is the question the people have. So this is an important aspect that is mentioned here, that mothers are the ones who maintain the child. Mothers are the ones who take care of the body and then nourish them psychologically also. They are the ones who will treat the values. They'll be the ones who don't eat with the left hand, eat with the right hand, do this, do that, etc., etc., etc. Their instructions are unending. Unending instructions, you know, from their mouth, and you know, it will keep coming like unending Ganga. Yes. But the kids don't take it as Ganga, they take it as something else. Enough, Ma. You know, when they mature, enough, Ma. How much you'll speak? I know what I'm supposed to do. But the mother's heart is, you know, so soft, and it's so caring and so loving, that even when the child grows up and gets married and having kids, even at that time, you know, the mother would keep giving instruction, do this, do that, do this, do that. So you can imagine, right from childhood, she takes care of the physical well-being, she takes care of the psychological well-being by teaching the values, and she also takes care of this emotional well-being by giving lots of love and affection. Lots of love and affection. That is the reason you see that when it comes to small kids, they'll always be with mother. They will go to any marriage function also, they would be with mother. They would go to any other function, they would be with the mother. Yes, every time they would be with the mother. Why? Because they feel that connect. And then the statement that he's making is very clear. How shall I be able to maintain them? So this is we can take it in the other sense also. That how will I do all this work? I cannot do all this. Or the true sense is, oh, okay. No, if she goes away, you know, she's the best person to take care of them. No, I cannot do that what she was doing. So that lamentation is speaking. Let's see the purport what Prabhupada is making, or what are the points Prabhupada is making. The bird is lamenting for the mother of his children because the mother naturally maintains and cares for the children. Yamaraj, however, in the guise of a small boy, has already explained that although his mother left him uncared for and wandering in the forest, the tigers and other ferocious animals had not eaten him. The real fact is that if the Supreme Personality of Godhead protects one, even though one be motherless and fatherless, one can be maintained by the goodwill of the Lord. Otherwise, if Supreme Lord does not give one protection, one must suffer in spite of presence of his father and mother. Another example is that sometimes a patient dies in spite of a good physician and good medicine. Thus, without protection of the Lord, one cannot live with or without parents. Another point in this verse is that fathers and mothers have protective feelings for their children, even in bird and beast society, not to speak of human society. Kali Yuga, however, is so degraded that a father and mother even kill their children in the womb on the plea of their scientific knowledge that within the womb the child has no life. Prestigious medical practitioners give this opinion, and therefore the father and mother of this day kill their children within the womb. How degraded human society has become. Their scientific knowledge is so advanced that they think that within the egg and embryo there is no life. Now these so-called scientists are receiving Nobel Prizes for advancing the theory of chemical evolution. But if chemical combinations are source of life, why don't the scientists manufacture something like an egg through the chemistry and put it in an incubator so that a chicken will come out? What is their answer? With their scientific knowledge, they are unable to create even an egg. Such scientists are described in Bhagavad Gita as Maya Aparata Gyanaha, fools whose real knowledge has been taken away. They are not men of knowledge, but they pose as scientists and philosophers, although their so-called theoretical knowledge cannot produce practical results. If any scientist hears this purport, he'll commit suicide. What? It's such a strong purport. So, we see that in this particular, many aspects Prabhupada is mentioning. So, Prabhupada talks about the current day, the current age parents. And it's actually the truth that nowadays kids are just byproduct of the enjoyment of male and female. And when they decide that we should just discard, they just discard it. And then sometimes even after the kid is born, the kid is thrown in garbage, and so many cases are there when this happens. So there's a question that is raised in the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, that what sort of mother she is, who is killing the baby in the womb itself in the name of abortion, or throwing the baby in the garbage in the name of unwanted progeny. What sort of mother she is? This is the question that is raised by Prabhupada in some purports. So you see, to be very frank, we might have got many, many different scientific things now with us. We are progressing very nicely scientifically, and that is the reason today we are sitting in. Now remotely also, we all are connected together. But at the same time, we have to understand that this material science, which is growing, more than advancement, it's more of degradation. Because when we say advancement, we have to understand we're talking about advancing towards Krishna. That is called advancement. There is no advancement when it comes to sense gratification. So we are not very advanced. In fact, it is described the lower planetary systems which are there. That is the different lokas, Atala, Vitala, Talatala, and Patala, Sutala and Patala. So all these planets which are there, in that, we have got amazing scientific advancement there. Yes. In fact, the things which are not manifesting here, it's there already. And it's described that when it comes to demons in the past, they had the best of the best scientific stuff with them. Best of the best. So currently, when we are progressing scientifically for sense gratification, then we are actually turning towards the same era where the demons lived exclusively. So that's what we are turning towards. Why this statement is made so strongly that we are becoming demons with scientific advancement? Because the values, be it, let's take simple values like moral values and ethical values. I'm not talking about spiritual values. Spiritual values is something very, very great, very high. When it comes to moral values and ethical values, they are pulled down like anything. You see? Now, when it comes to kids, touching the feet of parents, that itself is a very big thing. If some kid touches the feet of parents, the other parents were seeing, your kid is so nice. Because they are hardly able to see that in their own house. Because the kid is busy. PS, mobile phone, and so many other gadgets. So when it comes to scientific advancement, people are getting separated. They're not getting bonded to each other. They're getting separated. Before, in the evening, everyone would come together. The parents and kids would come together and they would have nice time discussing Ramayana, Mahabharata and scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. They would do nice kirtan together. They would have prasadam together. And during prasadam, they would not have TV in front of them. This chatterbox or useless box, or Prabhupada's term, the box made by fools, for fools. Yes. So, you know, just imagine TV is played and then, you know, everyone is sitting and just going and no one is talking to each other. It's almost like zombies sitting together to have dinner. But the actual, so that is the reason you see there is no family bonding. The kids don't have respect for the parents and the parents are least bothered about kids. The spouses are not very much attached to each other. Why? Because of this. All the scientific gadgets which have been put forward, and it's very handy now, you know, to everyone, including a small kid. So there is no bonding, you know, which is there with the family. And when there is no bonding, where is the question of family values? Where is the question of family values? When there is no love between the family members amongst themselves, where is the question of family values then? And then parents have this complaint that my kid is not respecting me. Are, how will your kid respect? If that love is not established between the kid and you, then how will your kid respect? How will the kid ever understand what my parents are doing for me? The culprits are parents only who have got the big TV, and nowadays it's like 42 inch, 51 inch, 72 inch. So, and then the TV is played, and everyone, parents will be the first one to play, right? These kids, when they're toddlers, they will never know that, okay, something like this exists. So parents will be the one who will, you know, play, and then the, you know, the movie will start and the parents are some eating and whatever. And sometimes I've seen mothers will play the TV and the child is small and she's like, look, look, it's so nice. Don't cry. Look here. Look there. This is the way nowadays the kids are made calm, you know, when they're crying. But when it comes to the previous yugas, what about previous yuga? This yuga in the start of Kali Yuga, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, when Sri Gauranga appeared, whenever Nimai would cry, whenever our Lord would cry, you know, in the cradle, so that time all the Matajis would come together, including Sachi Mata, the mother of Nimai, and they would all raise their hands and they would all chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. They would all come together and chant, and when they would do that, so that time what happens? Nimai would smile and sometimes he would shake his body in the cradle itself. So nowadays, the childhood only starts with mobile phone. I've seen some of my relatives, when the child is crying, they'll put some Bollywood song and keep the mobile besides the baby in the cradle. And the baby hears the sweet nectarian Bollywood song and it goes to sleep. Now tell me, what do you expect when the child grows up? More than getting attached to the parents, you know, you get attached to the gadgets and the other things in this world. Right? So the scientific advancement, you know, which is there, is actually killing the family values in the family. Now, when the values are killed in the family itself, tell me, where is the question of values in society, values in country, and values in the entire world? You know? Because everything starts from home, right? So that itself is missing. That itself is missing. So the scientific advancement is just an illusion. Oh, we are advancing very nicely. We are advancing very nicely. We are advancing nowhere. In fact, I would say that we are degrading. We are degrading. We had much better values, but now, you know, we are degrading so badly that small values are not there at home. Small values are not there at home. Right. So this is an alarm for all of us that at least now we should understand the importance of it. We shouldn't run away from our responsibility. We shouldn't run away from, or we shouldn't have our own priorities when it comes to raising kids. Now, nowadays, what's happening is, you know, parents have their own priority. I want to make my career. I want to do sense gratification myself. I want to see a movie. Child is there. One of my relatives said that. So she was watching something and then there was an adult scene and then I happened to be there in that family. I just visited their family and I said, you cannot watch all this in front of the kid. And she said, what can I do? Like, I have just come from the office. I want some, you know, this relaxation. And now, you know, I'm playing the TV and something else is coming. What can I do for that? I said, switch off the TV. And she said, if I switch off the TV, I'll go crazy. So own priorities, what to do? Own priorities. Yes. So like this, both, you know, parents, you know, have their own priorities. So what can we expect when it comes to kids? Somehow, you know, give the gadget, make the child sit quiet. Because, you know, both of them are working, so their head is hot and the child is crying and making even more hot. And they say, come here, take the mobile, do whatever you want. Leave us alone. We want some peace in life. tell me, with all this, how can we expect the child to grow with proper values? It's an alarm. It's an alarm that Prabhupada is giving us in his different purports. It's an alarm that we are going towards degradation. We are not advancing anywhere. Right? Only when we are advancing towards Krishna, we can say we are advancing. If we are not advancing towards Krishna, we are not advancing. We are degrading ourselves. Right? And let's take the other case now. When it comes to devotees. When it comes to devotees, they understand the importance of devotional service to Krishna. And when they are doing devotional service to Krishna, what's happening? The entire day they're engaged in service of Krishna. And who is observing that? The small kid is observing. Right? And now since they are busy in doing devotional service the entire day, they don't have time for television and this and that, whatever, sense gratification. Now the child is looking at the parents, okay, they are always busy in doing devotional service. They never watch TV. And when he goes to others' house, they're watching TV. Yes. So he's not understanding what's happening. And then maybe he thinks, okay, this is the right path. Or, he might think that is the right path sometimes. Yes. But what is more important here is that what is the impression that the parents are giving the entire day? And the impression that is given in the devotee family is both, that is mother and father, they're busy doing devotional service. And they have got such nice, loving relationship with each other. And, even their fights which are there, and that is based on service or whatever. So at that time, the child is looking at all this. Oh, okay. So my parents are doing selfless service to whom? To the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? Because he is superior to them. And now I am the youngest in this house. So what am I supposed to do? I am supposed to do selfless service to my parents because they are superior to me. And automatically, this values come up. The values are imbibed. When the devotees come home, so at that time, the small kid is seeing, looking at the parents, and the parents are, bowing down, touching the feet, or, bowing down in front of the Vaishnavas, and they are getting the glass of water, to give it to the Vaishnavas who have come home, and they're serving the devotees who have come home nicely. And all the time they're seeing the parents are serving very nicely to the superiors. And then the child is seeing, oh, okay, this is how it is done. And then the child will imbibe that value and he would start serving the parents. And then morning and evening when they come together to do aarti, so what happens? But the child and the parents, they all are coming together. And when they do aarti together, when they sing together, or when they sit together in a circle and do chanting. So all this creates a nice bonding. And there are amazing family values which are imbibed. Amazing family values. There's no question about that. Yes, because this is what was done in the Vedic culture, Vedic times. All glories to Srila Prabhupada who has taught all this, even to people who were Malechas in West. Even they were given this knowledge. And we see that those glorious kids of the devotee parents are so glorious now. They're good preachers all around the world. Right? So when it comes to advancement, it means we have to advance towards Krishna. And when it comes to advancement of material science, we have to understand it is not advancement, it is degradation. Right from personal values to the family values to society values, and it goes on. It goes on. Right. So in this way, we understand that when it comes to scientific knowledge, it's good to earn. But it's not very good when it comes to imbibing the value system. And I didn't talk about much. I didn't talk about the spiritual values. I'm just talking about ethical values. I didn't say that the child will become a good devotee. That will anyways happen. And I'm just speaking that even ethical values and moral values are not there in this world now. Because we are progressing scientifically. That is the reason. And since there is no connection, there is no attachment, there is no service mode between the two, be it mother, father, be it kids or whatever, and there is no love between the two, automatically there is unnecessary detachment which is there. And because of this detachment, what happens? The person is so selfish now. So selfish. I have my own things to be done. I have my own things to be done. And own, and everything in the house, everyone is having a different territory altogether. The mother is there in one territory, father is there in one territory, kids are there in their territories. Yes. The only thing that can happen between the territories is war. Yes, when the person from one territory comes to invade the territory of other person, what would happen? A war will happen. Right. So it's an alarm to all of us. We have to take a bhakti so seriously that just by looking at our practice, the kid should be able to practice. There's a big alarm. big alarm that Srila Prabhupada is giving in various purports of his. And here he has just given a glimpse of it. And also we see that when it comes to parents, the parents are known for giving protection to the child. No doubt about that. Parents are known to give protection for the child. And when the child is small, especially, the parents give, it's almost like a small bird taken care by the wings of the parent bird. That's how it is. That's how it is. But it's very clear that parents are not the ones who are actually giving protection. It's Krishna who is giving the protection through the parents. This has to be very clear. This is very clear. And in fact, even if parents are not there, there are many, many kids who are taken care of. Right, so Krishna takes care of all of them. But then obviously, kids shouldn't speak this saying, you're not taking care of me, Krishna is taking care of me. Yeah. So the philosophy should be taught at the right time. Right. So in this way, this bird is speaking that these babies are so unfortunate, the mother is caught and she'll be killed. What is this, oh Lord, what is this? And he's just crying out like that. Yes. And the next verse, because of the loss of his wife. So now the female bird is caught in the net and the hunter has caught that female bird. The Kulinga bird lamented with tears in his eyes. Meanwhile, following the dictations of mature time, the hunter, who was very carefully hiding in the distance, released his arrow, which pierced the body of the Kulinga bird and killed him. Oh. You see this, what has happened, Bob? It's like too difficult to comprehend. Now, someone is lamenting for someone who is caught in some problem. And then, with time, that someone who is lamenting is not realizing that with time, even he is going to meet the same destination what the person has met in front of him. This is a very, very important point. In fact, I would like to elaborate on this point, and this would be a nice takeaway from today's class. So in all our lives, we are attached to so many things. In day-to-day life, we are attached to so many things, so many. Be it things or be it people, we are attached. And the most important thing that happens in a Baddha Jiva's life, that is a Jivatma or a person who is caught in the cycle of birth and death, along with the cycle of birth and death, he's caught in the cycle of hankering and lamentation. And that's what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Sochati Na Kangshati Samha Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. So who is that person who can attain perfection in life? Krishna is saying, the one who has Na Sochati. Na Sochati Na Kangshati. Na Kangshati means no hankering. No Sochati means no lamentation. Such a person is the one who can attain perfection. This is what Krishna is saying. Why Krishna is saying this? No hankering, no lamentation. Before that, we have to understand the concept of attachment. So, the second chapter, the last verses, which talks about the attachment to different things. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangasteshupajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodo bajayate. So this basically says that dhyayato vishayan pumsaha. So how do we get attached to some things? When we start meditating on that, when we start meditating, dhyayato vishaya, when we start meditating on the vishaya or the sense objects, we get attached to those sense objects. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangasteshu upajayate. Automatically that attachment comes. Upajayate. Sangasteshu upajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha. Yes, so that this attachment which is there, which we have for that thing, that turns into lust. That basically means that I want that particular thing for my enjoyment. That is the mood of the person now. And then after that, what happens? Sangat sanjayate kama, kamat krodho bajayate. But when that kama is not fulfilled, that turns into krodha. Why that turns into krodha? Because the person is not able to get that particular thing which he's attached to. So in our lives, we see, look at how practical Bhagavad Gita is. Those people are fools who say that Bhagavad Gita is just a myth or mythological book or whatever. It's a practical manual for human life. Anyone who perfects Bhagavad Gita, that person is delivered from the clutches of birth. No doubt about that. Yes. Because everything is given in Bhagavad Gita. Everything. Now when it comes to attachment also, look at this wonderful aspect that is given. That as soon as we start meditating on something, we get attached to it. Now, if those are essentials of life, still it is acceptable. Okay, theek hai, these are essentials of life. But sometimes, now in this current age, this current century, what is happening is people are getting attached to very superficial things around, which are not even essential for one's own life. And they say that it's my need to have that particular thing. It's my need to have that particular thing. Right? A simple example that we can take is mobile phones. Very, very simple to understand. Before, there were only four basic needs. Three. Food, shelter, clothing. Now we have mobile phone also. And internet. So without that, the things will not work now. Now you see, suppose the mobile phone is not working. Suppose your kid has put it in water or whatever. So it's not working. Still, we are able to manage ourselves very nicely. I see. Even when it comes to me also, I'm also very attached to my mobile phone. Yes, but we have seen that even when it is not working, we can live without that. So that basically goes on to say it's not an essential thing in our life. It's not the need. It's just a want. It's just a greed and nothing else. Right. So this is one aspect where we get attached to things. At the same time, we get attached to people around. And this attachment just grows and grows and grows. So like, for example, I think I've given this example before also, that a person who is married begets kids, and then the kid also gets married, and then he begets kids. Now when the person who has begotten kids gets that child onto a particular stage of life, where he's earning by himself, he has got married, now he's responsible. Even when he's got to that stage, still there'll be lots of attachment to that person. And the byproducts from the person are also the object of attachment. So even when the grandchildren are born, so these grandparents who are there, uselessly they get attached to the grandchildren. Now grandparents, what is their job? Oh, they are old, so they have to do devotional service. Now they are already attached to the kids, and now they're getting attached to the grandchildren. And then the grandparents are worried. Is my grandchild studying properly? Is he doing this properly? Is he doing that properly? You do your bhajan, no? You do your japa. Why the hell you need to understand what your grandchildren are trying to do? You're done. You're done as soon as your kids are grown up. But what to do? This is called as unnecessary attachment. See, attachment of parents towards a child is understood. Attachment of spouse to spouse is understood. Yes. But unnecessary attachment to people around does not make any sense. Does not make any sense, right? And then what happens is, when we get unnecessary attachment, and when it is taken away, from us, at that time, there's a grief that strikes us. Our situation is grief-stricken at that time. And the person gets into lamentation. Now, when we lose a thing, or when we lose a person, we lose anything that is dear to our heart. So at that time, the person gets into the mode of lamentation. Oh, I lost it. Oh, I lost it. Oh, I lost it. And now when the person gets into the cycle of lamentation, at that time, he spends a lot of time just thinking about what he has lost. But least he knows that very soon, even he will be lost in oblivion. Yes. Now what's happening? Every single moment that is there in our life, every single minute, every single kshana that is given in our life is meant to get closer to Krishna, because human life is very rare, very, very rare. We cannot even understand how rare human form is, so we take it for granted. It's very rare because only in this form we can attain Krishna. There is no other form in which we can attain Krishna. And that to a human form where the entire body is working and having good intelligence to understand the philosophy. Can you imagine how rare this form is? And then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7.3, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mameti tattvataha. Only very, very few people endeavor towards the path of success, and only very, very, very few out of them, they actually attain me. So there are very few people who actually attain Krishna. Why? Because this rare human form is not realized properly by the different living entities who have taken this human form. And now when we've got this rare human form, then we have to also understand the time with this rare human form is rare. And this time is very precious, very precious, very precious. Sometimes, devotees say that, Prabhu, I didn't chant today. I'll chant tomorrow. Now, when the statement is made, I didn't chant today, I'll chant tomorrow, this basically goes on to say that, it's okay. I didn't chant yesterday, I'll chant tomorrow. I didn't chant today, I'll chant tomorrow. What's the big deal? But there is a big deal, because this current time you're not utilized in service of Krishna. Now, if you're not utilizing the current time in service of Krishna, then how can we attain Krishna? Sometimes people say that, Prabhu, I want to relax for some time. Thoda break chahiye, thoda chill out. I want to chill out and I want to hang around and have some nice time and yo-yo. I want to do this, I want to do that. Yeah, theek hai, go ahead, go do it. But then, we have to remember one important thing, that is, this time is extremely rare, because this time is not the time of animal form, it's the time of the rare human form. If it would have been of animal form, anyways, animals are programmed for eating, sleeping, mating. So it hardly matters, their time hardly matters, because they are just there in a sequential evolution to human form. Now, finally, they'll come to human form. But people who have come to human form, and then who have got good intelligence to understand philosophy, who have started practicing bhakti, who have got a good path to practice bhakti under the guidance of Guru and Gauranga, when they don't utilize the time properly, no one can help that person. No one. And you know what is happening with time? We are very casual with time. Whenever I say we, I'm not talking about you all, I'm talking about me and my mind. Whenever I speak such topics, I remind myself. So with time, what is happening is, so we are losing time, that is there. And our current situation mentioned in one of the places in Shastra, it is said that the time is like the python. And this python is slowly gulping the person. Slowly gulping the person. And the person is not understanding also. Now, when we say that, I'm 10 years old, so that basically goes on to say I've died 10 years. I've died. My 10 years have died. Yes. And then whatever remains is remains. So when I say that my 10 years have died, so basically means that python has gulped that part of the body. The legs have gone inside the python's body. And now slowly the python is going ahead and it's gulping more and more and more and more. And finally, what is death? When the python gulps the entire person. So that is time. So every moment is very, very important. It cannot be taken for granted. Anytime we take even a moment of human life for granted. Now there is one very nice thing that is said in Shastra, that one moment that is lost cannot be gained even when we give the entire creation of Brahma in exchange of that one moment. We don't own the entire creation of Brahma, but still, suppose Brahma gives the entire creation to us and he says, do whatever you want. And you want to trade that entire creation with that one moment that we have lost in the past. We cannot get back that one moment. I never understood this time and tide waits for none. I never understood in my childhood. But when we started practicing bhakti at that time, it has become very, very relevant. Very relevant. Because every moment that is going, that is past, is a sign that that particular moment you didn't get closer to Krishna. Yes. Because every moment of human life is given to get closer to Krishna only. Every moment. What to talk about hours and days together? Sometimes when people say that, I want to chill out for days, I'm going for outing for a week or whatever. Yes, the heartbeats, go really high. Arey bapre, you're losing days. Can you imagine days? What do you mean by days? Yes, Parshut Maharaj had 7 days and he perfected his life. And this person is going for outing for 7 days. Yes, Parshut Maharaj knew when he's going to die, so he was very fired up. Those 7 days he utilized to a very great extent. But in our life, we don't know how much python has already gulped us. Parshut Maharaj knew. In next 7 days, the python is going to gulp him completely, going to eat him completely. But in our case, we don't know which part of the body is already inside the body of python. We don't know. And we are thinking we have a lot of time. Prabhuji, I'm just 40, I'm just 50. No, still time is there. Time is there. Yes. But one thing is very clear, that this rare human form, the time that is given in this rare human form is extremely rare. It cannot be wasted. It cannot be wasted in anything. Here, it's a very high level thing. Anyways, I'll describe this in some time. But you know, just think about the time that we waste in small, small things around. Facebook. Now, I really don't understand what's there in that. Recently, I uninstalled my even devotee account. So before I had, in my college time, I had one account. So in that, a lot of friends were there. So I deactivated that and created another one where only devotees were there. But then I started finding, okay, there is some problem here also. There's some problem here also. And our mind is so crazy. No, I was just observing myself, you know, just going on. I was just saying, okay, this devotee is doing this, this devotee is doing that. Arey Baba, what you are doing? This question was coming again and again. And then I've seen so many devotees. You know, they have just given up with social media completely. I don't understand this Instagram and this and that. Okay, that person has put photos and then you're watching. What are you getting out of it? In fact, there are bad samskaras coming on the mind. Oh, this person went to enjoy at this place. Oh, when will I go? Now, just imagine, this is an unnecessary attachment or desire that has creeped in. Unnecessary, completely. Right? So in this way, you know, we see that just by getting into all these small, you know, things, automatically, you know, we get attached and we are losing time. We are losing time. Yes. And when we are losing time, we are not losing time of animal life, we are losing time of human life. So these are not superficial things which can easily be stopped. Easily. It doesn't take much time. Right? So like, for example, you are addicted to watching TV. You understand it's just a waste of time. Why should I literally go ahead? I made one analysis, so maybe it can help you. So I wanted to stop watching movies. I used to watch movies like anything. I was like very much addicted. Then I was doing one analysis, movies and cricket and other things, which are very much crazy in India. So I was making an analysis. Okay, so the hero, heroine, they're enjoying on the screen and they're paid for it. Yes. And then they're living a very good life. They're enjoying outside the screen also. But what am I getting when I'm sitting for 3 hours in front of the screen? Then there was a selfish motive. And then this thought came. That is just a waste of time. They are gaining. I'm not gaining anything. Yes. And Rupa Goswami says, one quality of lauliam should be there in everyone. Greed. When a person has lauliam, such a person can actually attain Krishna. That greed should be there. That greed. That greed of, okay, I've got this time. How much can I utilize? How much can I make out from this time that is given to me by Krishna? Yes. So now when I'm watching something, when I'm just hanging around for something, so that time, this question should be asked, what am I gaining out of this particular activity that I'm doing? Am I gaining something or not? Am I gaining something or not? When the answer is no, we just immediately give up. Immediately give up, right? Now, these things are very easy. And I've seen many, many devotees just giving up these small things in life. And taking inspiration from them, it has helped me to give up small things in life. Now, this is superficial. Let's keep it aside and we can work on it. You people are very much innovative and you know how to get rid of these things. In fact, I'm sure you might be giving classes and sessions to your kids on these topics. Yes. But here there is an important topic. What is the topic? The topic is about lamentation. Hankering and lamentation. Hankering and lamentation. So what happens when we get into the cycle of hankering and lamentation? Let's understand that. When I start hankering something which is temporary in this world, and when I lose that particular thing, which is but obvious that I'm going to lose, and I lose it, then I get into lamentation. Now, in this cycle of hankering and lamentation, what is happening is I'm just losing time. Simple. Now, like for example, someone has died in the family. It's a very, very sensitive thing. When someone dies, it's a very sensitive thing. So at that time, we cannot go and give this philosophy, hankering, lamentation, or whatever. Yes, but then for us to understand as students of Gita, since Krishna is mentioning about Sochati and Kangshati, we'll discuss about this. So when the person gets into the cycle of lamentation and hankering, what is happening is, in this cycle, he's losing another cycle, that is cycle of time. Yes, and the cycle of time is going very fast, very, very fast. You look at how the weekends are going. Now it's Thursday, next 2 days, Bhakti Vriksha time will come, then another Sunday is there. Again, Monday, and they're just going. And now the question is that when the person gets into some lamentation of losing something in life, so at that time, tell me how much time the person is losing. because it's completely engrossed thinking about it. How what's happening? Why did this happen? Why does this happen? It has happened already. There's no question of holding it in the mind. Done. So it's already gone. So what is the use of thinking about it, which is already gone? Why aren't we thinking about this rare human form, this rare time has to be utilized in service of Krishna? And you know, when it comes to losing some person, still it can be understood, the attachment. But you know, when someone insults us, someone speaks to us badly, or you know, something happens to us, you know, whatever. So that time we get so engrossed, you know, in that thought, and we start lamenting, why did I do this? I shouldn't have spoken this to him. Why he spoke like this to him? Are it gone? Done. The discussion is done. Done. There is no time for all this. There is no time for all this. Our human life is extremely short. I shouldn't show this much, although it's like this much. Yes? It's very, very short. Why am I saying short? When it comes to Brahma's lifetime, that is 311 trillion 40 billion years, it is called as flash of lightning. Shastras call the lifespan of Brahma, which is 311 trillion 40 billion years, as flash of lightning. Now tell me what we will call our lifespan as. Now suppose we are 30. Max, how many years we will live? Another, say, 20, 30 years more. So how this 20, 30 years will go, we'll never understand. Never. In fact, now we look back and see how these years passed. How these 20, 30 years have passed. We'll never get to know also. Similarly, in future, we'll never get to know how these 20, 30 years will pass. Very, very soon. Very soon this will happen. And very soon, the death personified will stand in front of us. Very soon. So in this way, and that too, I'm talking about natural death. I'm not talking about some mishap. Mishap though, you can never know what's going to happen. Never. Natural death means still we can say that, okay, the person will get old. To get old, another 20, 30 years is there. But mishap, we never know. So this rare human form, the rare time in this rare human form is given to us only and only to do devotional service and to get closer to Krishna. Simple. There is nothing beyond this. No, there is nothing to think beyond this. So we have to get closer to Krishna in this given span of time. Now we cannot suppose we are dying. And then Yamadutas come and then you say, 5 minutes. 5 minutes. It's not this exam which we write. This exam that we write you know, in our school times. Then the teacher is coming to take the paper and we're like, madam, 5 minutes. Five minutes. And then we write for half an hour. That will not work here when it comes to Yamadutas. They put Yamapasha and instantly they'll pull the person out of the body. Instantly. And when this happens, we cannot say 5 minutes time. You just ask for time, they'll hit like anything. That's what is given in Shastra. Now, if the person starts, you know, lamenting at that particular point of time, that, you know, please give me some more time, the people hit like anything, it seems. That's a description given. So time will not be, you know, you cannot buy time at that last moment. Whatever time is given now, that has to be utilized. You cannot buy time later. Not possible. Whatever time is given now, we have to be extremely intelligent. So it is said that Krishna Bhakta Bada Chatur. Krishna's devotees are very intelligent. Why? Because they understand the importance of time. And when they understand the importance of time, they modify their lifestyle in such a way that they give maximum time for Krishna's service to attain perfection of life. So in this way, we can imagine that this short span of time which we have got, what are we currently doing? This is the question that we all have to ask. This is an activity for all of you all. Yes, try to do this activity. I do it almost every day. You can do it today. So try to do this activity, that this entire day, how much time did I get closer? Did I invest in Krishna or Krishna consciousness? And how much closer I got today when it comes to these 24 hours, which was given to me today? How much time have I utilized and got closer to Krishna? This is the question. And ask this question every single night. We'll sleep with depression every day. Yes. And this question has to be asked at night, and then we have to plan for the next day. Now, many of you might ask this question, Prabhuji, but we have got, you are a useless fellow without a job, but we have a job, we have kids. Yes. Yeah, no doubt about that. Yes, a lot of responsibilities are there with everyone. So one thing is there, that whatever work we are doing, are we chanting? This question can be asked. When I'm taking bath, am I chanting? When I'm cooking, am I chanting? When I'm driving, am I chanting or not? When I'm having prasadam, am I playing the lecture and trying to hear the lecture? When I literally have time, when, you know, there is peaceful time am I utilizing that in service of Krishna or not? This watching of the TV, you know, am I utilizing that time in service of Krishna or not? So these questions have to be asked. And when such questions are asked, automatically Krishna within the heart, you know, he will inspire. Because when Krishna sees that, oh, this person is ready to give sense gratificatory activities just for attaining me, he gives the knowledge. He gives the remembrance. Because he is the one. Sarvasya Cham Ridhi Sannivishto Matta Smriti Jnana Apohanam. He is the one who is there in everyone's heart, and he gives knowledge and remembrance. He will give us the knowledge and remembrance. Right? But at least this realization should be there. The time is rare. I cannot miss even a moment. When sometimes people say that it will be difficult for me to attend the session, or it is difficult for me to chant, it's difficult for me to read here. Okay. Now, what's happening? There is no difficulty in that, but your mind is putting the difficulty. And when that difficulty, you know, that you're facing, artificial difficulty that you're facing, you're actually losing time. Can you imagine missing one satsang? So missing one satsang basically means missing one satsang or one Bhagavatam class of human form of life. Oh, cannot be imagined. How can we miss one satsang also in this human form of life? How can we miss that? How can we miss even 1 minute of the day? We cannot. So sometimes when people say it's very difficult to digest, that sometimes we have to relax also. Aray, we cannot relax. There is no time for relaxation. A person who can relax is Brahma, 311 trillion, 40 billion years. But even he is not relaxing. Even he is not relaxing. He's taxing all his four brains. And he's trying to innovate things by which he can be completely immersed in Krishna consciousness. Yes. You remember in the time session, in the Kala session, I had given example of what was that Rishi's name? Roma Harshni. Yeah. Anyone remembers that Rishi's name? I forgot. The Rishi whose hair would fall at the end of the day of Brahma. Anyone remembers? Okay, no one remembers. Students are like the teacher. Oh, yeah. Lomasa Rishi. Yeah, Lomasa. Yeah, Lomasa Rishi. Yeah. So Lomasa Rishi, he had this benediction that was given to him, that at the end of the day of Brahma, one hair would fall from his body. And then when all the hair of his body would fall, at that time, he will die. Now you can imagine that how long or what was the lifespan of Lomasa Rishi. You can imagine. But when the students of Lomasa Rishi, the disciples of Lomasa Rishi came and they said that, Guru Maharaj, we want to build a house for you, a cottage for you, a hermitage for you, so that you can do your bhajan nicely. So you know what Lomasa Rishi said? No, we have very less time. We shouldn't waste time. My God. This gives me goosebumps. Whenever I speak about this gives me goosebumps. You know, what time sense this person had, Lomasa Rishi. You know? So in this way, you know, the point that we have to understand is that whatever time we are investing in Krishna consciousness, let's invest it in a very, very qualitative way, first. Second, let's try to invest more and more time in Krishna consciousness. Let's reduce all the time which we are just doing time pass. Let's use the same time for reading pastimes. Let's do that. It's just about shifting the time and pass. That's it. Time pass and then shift it ahead. It will become pastime. Yes, so we have to read the pastimes of the Lord in that time given. And then, we have to invest more time. And whatever time we are investing, it has to be qualitative. Like now you are hearing Bhagavatam class. You people are very sincere, so here you hear attentively. Similarly, the same thing, attentiveness has to be used in all our devotional activities. Chanting, let's be attentive. Can you imagine we are investing 2 hours in chanting 16 rounds? And then when the mind goes here and there, what's happening? We are wasting those 2 hours. Means 2 hours is exclusive. We are giving 2 hours. And in that 2 hours, we are not chanting properly. So where is the quality there, right? So we have to tell the mind, Arey, Baba, 2 hours is so rare. It's human life got 2 hours. Please don't waste. Please help me. I want to focus on the holy name. When we're sitting with Srimad Bhagavatam and when we're reading pastimes of Krishna, we shouldn't get into our leelas. I have to do this, I have to do that after reading. When we're reading, we're just reading. Even if there's a bomb blast besides, it's okay. We just read and then complete and then get up and see, oh, okay, bomb blast. Yes. But we are completely immersed. When we are chanting, we are completely immersed. When we are hearing, we are so attentive. that every single word enters the ear and enters the heart and cleanses the heart of the person. So attentive we should be, so attentive. And then when we are worshiping the Lord, we have to understand it's an opportunity in the rare human form of life, a rare time that is given, a rare opportunity to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with the own hands and serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When we are cooking, now the same mood is there that, oh, in this rare human form, the rare time is given to cook for Krishna, which is a rare opportunity. Let me get immersed in that particular activity. So getting immersed in that particular activity is whatever we are doing, that is there in our hand. Investing more time in Krishna consciousness, that is there in our hand. But extending our lifetime is not there in our hand. Not there. Come what may, not there. So this is an important takeaway from today's class, that now this time factor which is there is Krishna, and Krishna says, Aham Kalosmi. And we can never capture time because we can never capture Krishna. Yes, but one thing is there, that this time can be utilized in service of Krishna. Our time can be utilized in service of Krishna. The day we do it, or the day we start doing it, yes, we actually say that, yes, I'm valuing the time because the time is Krishna. Yes, anytime we are wasting our time, basically we are saying we are not valuing Krishna, we are disrespecting Krishna. Yes. So we have to understand, what is time? Time is Krishna. Because Krishna says, I am Kalosmi, I am time. And whenever we utilize, we are serving Krishna, always remember. And whenever we are wasting, we have to understand we are just hitting Krishna. Right? So in this way, you know, when it comes to devotees, they understand the value of time and they become fired up in their devotional service. And here, you know, we see the same thing, what happened? The time is passing and this person was lamenting, this Pullinga bird, he was lamenting. He was lamenting to such an extent that he didn't realize his time has also come. I mean, his kala, his death has also come. And what this hunter did, he had already taken the female Kulinga bird and now he captured the male Kulinga bird also, and both of them were killed. Both of them were killed. So yes, in our life also, you know, this time will come. This time will come, right? So in this way, you know, we have to value time, and this is what Yamaraj is speaking. So we'll just complete this last sloka and we'll end for the day. Thus Yamaraj in guise of small boy told all the queens, you are all so foolish that you lament but do not see your own death. Afflicted by a poor fund of knowledge, you do not know that even if you lament for your dead husband for hundreds of years, you'll never get him back alive. And in the meantime, your lives will be finished. So in this way, you know, when Yamaraj spoke all this, so at that time, all the females, you know, who were hearing, they all were enlightened. And they were all enlightened and they got detached from the body of Suyagya and they allowed the body to be cremated. And all of them also entered the cremation fire. Anyways, the shlokas will come in the future sessions. So with this, I would like to pause the session and take your questions. So if you have any questions, please post your questions. So hope there is no question before. Vrishabhanu is wife. Yeah, it's Vrishabhanu. Vrishabhanu is the wife of Hiranyaksha. How we can imagine our life if time component is not there at all? So we need not invest time in imagining at that time. How we can imagine our life if time component is not there at all? Why we are not able to comprehend that is basically because from time immemorial, we are there with time. Yes. And we are swayed, you know, by this time from birth to death, you know, every lifetime. That is the reason. That is the reason we are not able to comprehend. But when it comes to spiritual world, there is no factor of time. This time is externally, Krishna is present as time. But there externally, Krishna is present in his original form. What is the need of time there? Right. So when it comes to the spiritual world, it's ever blissful, that is. So when it comes to ever blissful place, it basically goes on to say there is no fear. And what is the fear? Mostly the fear is of time. Oh, I'm losing time. Any time my kala can come. So that is the fear. So it's very blissful in the spiritual world. When it comes to material world, it's always fearful. And we are bound. It's very difficult to think also. What if there is no time? In fact, one boy asked me this question. If there is no death, then what will be the adventure in life? Can you imagine this question? If there is no death, what will be the adventure in life? Then I told him, you keep doing adventures and be here in this material world. Because people cannot imagine, very difficult. That is the reason when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand, oh, there is a world out there which is free from this fear of time. Right? So only when we get purified, we'll be able to understand that what do we actually mean? Mean to be in a place without time. That's what I would say. How much is life of Yamaraj? So there is no number that is given. So Yamaraj is one of the Mahajan. So Yamaraj is a pure devotee, eternal associate of the Lord. So he's eternal. He's eternal. So when it comes to Yamaraj, he's serving the Lord in his capacity. So, and he's an eternal associate of the Lord. So he's also, you know, he's there in the 12 Mahajans. The 12 personalities who are called as Mahajans, who are the personalities who establish this cult of bhakti, or how to practice bhakti. And common public follow these 12 Mahajans. And one of them is Yamaraj. So you can imagine his level. So when it comes to a mortal being, when he becomes a pure devotee, he becomes eternal. So Yamaraj is already eternal. So that is the life of Yamaraj, eternal. One realization, being a commerce student, today I understood the topic of maximization of profit, how to be greedy, how to attain Krishna. Good. But don't write this in paper. When I start reading Prabhupada books, I start getting sleep in 30 minutes. Any practical tips? Okay, how to handle sleep? So basically, you're not the only one. You are very frank and very, very honest. So you're putting it in a public forum, this question. But most of the people here, I'm sure, including me, we do get sleep when it comes to philosophical subject matters, when we read books, even when we hear lectures. In fact, my lectures are known for that. People will sleep and get up. So when it comes to reading Prabhupada books, slowly and steadily when the purification happens, automatically the taste will come. And then we cannot live without reading Prabhupada books. It'll be very difficult. Every day we need that. It will be like a drug. You have to take that drugs in order to be satisfied. That day will come. But currently in our situation where we are Baddha Jivas, we don't have taste in Krishna consciousness. So what we are supposed to do is that time which is given, or the time that we are setting for ourselves, we have to do it forcefully at that time. 30 minutes, forcefully. Yes. So some devotees set timer and they sit because they don't have, like devotees in general, including me, there's no taste in reading. So, at least when the timer is put and we say 30 minutes, I'm going to sit and the timer is ticking, we are reading the book. We keep seeing the timer, okay, still time is there, we read the book. So at least like this, we can force ourselves and keep reading. And we have to tell, okay, only after 30 minutes, I'm going to get up. Only after 1 hour, I'm going to get up. So something like that. So when it comes to reading, currently, I would recommend, please force yourself. One. Second, please make notes when you're reading. This helps me a lot personally. So whenever there's an important point, I make notes. And another thing that we can see is when Prabhupada talks about something, Prabhupada quotes different shlokas from different scriptures. Or concepts from different scriptures. Like from Bhagavatam, when we read Bhagavatam, we see Bhagavad Gita shlokas. So that time when we read Bhagavatam shlokas, any other book we are reading and we see Bhagavad Gita shlokas. So at that time we can go back to that and see, here it's given. And then you'll be able to connect. So whenever we are able to connect things properly, we'll get more and more interest to read that particular thing. Like currently what we are doing in Bhagavatam classes, we are trying to connect the outside world, with Bhagavatam and our own life. So that is the reason, we are able to relish Bhagavatam. So when we're reading Prabhupada books, we have to pause for some time and make an analysis. Okay, how this particular thing is affecting me first. And second is how this particular thing that I'm reading will help me to get closer to Krishna. And if I analyze like that, how will I get closer to Krishna by reading this particular purport? And you'll see every purport of Srila Prabhupada will take us closer to Krishna. Provided we are vigilant when we're reading. So when we understand this, every purport is taking me closer to Krishna, yes, and then it's helping me to connect and understand the outside world, understand Krishna, automatically the taste will come, automatically. So some active endeavor is needed, active endeavor. When we are passively reading, then at that time, we'll enter swapna state or sleep state, nidra state. But when we're actively reading, trying to connect different things and trying to analyze, this thing happened in my life, and see, Prabhupada is mentioning here, this is how it works. Then you go back to Bhagavad Gita and then you see the same verse given there, right? And then you read the purport of that particular verse. Then you understand, oh, okay, this is how it is. And you will relish. You will relish. Mine will have multiple engagements, right? 2-3 books are there. And then you're, you know, relating with outside world, your past experiences. And then, you know, how to get closer to Krishna. When all this analysis happens, automatically that, you know, taste will be there for you. So initially, you know, start with forcefully doing all these things, what I mentioned, then it will become natural. Then that will become our second nature. So this particular thing, whatever I just spoke, has helped me personally. So I thought I can share with you. Start playing some kirtan. Yeah, you can do that, provided, you know, you can focus while reading. Can some recreation like outdoor sports help us increase our concentration freshness? Will it not help our devotion if the mood is like that? I like sports. Unless that hinders my visit to temple, I would like to play a little. Okay. So, yeah, if we are really that interested, we can go ahead. But one thing is there, that when we get into sports, so we see that we become passionate and we forget, you know, that particular, that 1 hour or whatever we are playing, we forget, you know, what has happened in that time. We forget. You know, we're just busy playing. We're just busy playing. Yeah, if you're playing with Krishna, it's a different thing. So, in fact, I would suggest you can go ahead till the point you have interest, go ahead. But then if you can start aspiring to play the outdoor sports with Krishna in spiritual world, I think that will be the best thing. Yes, and for that, we can you know, endeavor a lot. Yes. Playing sports here, okay, it's good, but not great. But playing sports with Krishna, yes. You know, it's really amazing. It's really amazing. So why the sports and cinemas and other things are not really recommended for a sadhaka is because it consumes our time. No, we cannot remember Krishna at that time. Yes. But then, yes, you know, when we are playing for some time and the mood is, okay, I want to get freshen up and come back and immediately, like, for example, we're getting, you know, sleep. And we're getting sleep and then, you know, we are going out to play and, you know, within 15-20 minutes, we are back. Yes, we are freshen up and then we are back for Krishna consciousness. It makes some sense. But then you go to play and then you're just there. So, then that's a big, you know, a loss of time. So, it's a problem. Does Krishna like playing football? Oh, all the games which we play in this world are directly from the spiritual world. Nothing we can invent in this world. Baseball, football, everything is from spiritual world only. Cricket, everything from spiritual world. Any tip to improve the quality of chanting? Oh, it's a $1 million question. Which frequently asked question. There are some things you know, which I have implemented, which is, because I can speak only, you know, what I've implemented and what has helped me. So one is early morning chanting. As early as possible. Like, for example, 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, you know, when the entire world is sleeping. Yes, at that time we get up and then, you know, we start chanting. You know, it's peaceful time, peaceful time. That really helps us a lot. That helps the chanting like anything. The quality will increase like anything, multifolds first. Second is, now we have to look forward eagerly, you know, that, okay, I want to chant. Now the important time is coming. This chanting time is the most important time of my day. Now this time is going to come. I'm supposed to prepare myself. So when we're taking bath, you know, we're thinking about it. Okay, I have to chant now. Yes, when we're dressing ourselves, we're thinking, oh, I have to chant now. So like this, we prepare our mindset. So prepare the mindset before chanting. And then we sit for chanting. Now we prepare our mindset by offering prayers to Krishna, to our Guru, to Srila Prabhupada. And then we offer intense prayers and we say that, see, I am a, you know, mortal being of this world and I have no taste for chanting. Oh Lord, oh Gurudev, you know, you only please help me. You only please shower your mercy. Then I'll be able to chant. So like this, you know, we can offer prayers intensely. And we can sit in the meditative position. This helps a lot. So you sit cross-legged, you know, if you don't have any health issues. And then you sit straight. And then you close your eyes. If you're not getting sleep, you close your eyes. And then, you know, you chant with, you know, intensity. You know, you chant a bit louder, you know, so that you can hear your voice. And then at the same time, you know, when you're chanting around, so you can maybe, you know, do like this, that, okay, I'll not move my body for this one round. You're just straight. Even if there is an itch, you know, you're not moving yourself. Yes. And something like that. Or you you tell yourself that for next 4 rounds, I'm not going to get up from this position. I'll not change my position. So like this, when you make the body stable, So at that time, you can work on stabilizing the mind. And the setup should be stable around. Like you can just imagine everything is moving and then you are also moving and then your mind is also moving. Your beads are also moving. Tell me, how can we focus? It's very difficult. Everything is moving, so it will not be able to. So try to set up the things around. Now, stable. Make it stable first. And then, you know, we can sit straight, stabilize our body. And anyways, the mind is moving. You know, it will go crazy. We stabilize our body and then we stabilize our position properly. And then, you know, we start chanting. And when we're chanting, at that time, we try to be focused. We remind ourselves, I'm doing the most important thing. I'm doing the most important thing. And we have a simple goal that if I'm able to hear one Maha Mantra, I'm very fortunate. This is a sutra that is given by the Prabhupada disciple. If I'm able to hear one Maha Mantra, I'm fortunate. So let me hear at least one Maha Mantra attentively. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Oh, maza aagaya. Chalo, one more mantra. Yes. So like this, you know, one mantra, at least one mantra I want to hear attentively. So we can, you know, have that. Yes. And for other tips is like we need to have proper sleep at night. So that in the morning when we get, see, basically you prepare yourself the previous day itself, you know, when it comes to the next day chanting. You sleep early, you know, you maybe eat a bit less at night so that, you know, you get a sound sleep, you don't get much dreams. And then, you know, when you get up, you're fresh and you get up early. So because you slept early, you can get up early. And when you get up early, so there is peace all around. It's very calm. And then when you sit chant for chanting, no disturbance at all. Just imagine your kids are sleeping and your spouse is sleeping and you get up and, you know, you go to a secluded place. Yes. And then it's calm. You know, the cool breeze is flowing. And then you're chanting in that. Oh, that's an amazing experience. So every day we do that here in ISKCON Whitefield. So from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock we chant. So that's a very nice experience, provided, you know, we have nice sleep at night. Yes. So this is what I'm able to currently remember. So this is what we can implement. What's that? Remember in the Leela where the ball went inside the pond. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. The ball went into different forests also at times. And then that's how they found some asuras. Yes. Should we avoid hearing kirtans from non-devotees? Yes, what obvious. You know, we shouldn't hear anything from non-devotees. Because when you're hearing anything from non-devotees, what happens is, see, when you're hearing, you're just thinking, oh, the sound is so nice, the voice is so nice, aha. This music and this instrument and this violin and whatever. But one thing we have to understand, when we are hearing something, the sound is actually carrying the mood of the person. Now suppose I am hearing a person who is lusty or greedy, and he is a singer and he has sung some devotional song. So that song, that sound which is there, that is carrying the mood of the person, that enters our ears, enters our heart and changes our mood. Right. So it is recommended that we should hear from devotees only who are aspiring to attain Krishna. Because when we hear devotees who are aspiring to attain Krishna, we also get that mood to attain Krishna. Yes. When we hear from non-devotees, we get their mood of sense gratification. So it is recommended that non-devotees kirtan shouldn't be heard. Be it the best of the best voice, we shouldn't hear that particular kirtan. In fact, it is a very strong purport. Prabhupada writes in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know, purport. That comes in Vaishnava songbook. He writes that when the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra heard from the mouth of a non-devotee is like the milk that is touched with the tongue of the serpent. Very strong. This is what he writes. So we should be careful. No non-devotee kirtans or lectures or whatever. Can we chant without taking bath? I was puzzled previously when I was chanting, or it's an offense. So yes, we can chant without, like, for example, suppose in the previous day, so you have not gone to attain the nature's call, that is for passing stool. Then you can just, you know, next day you can just wash your hands and legs and, you know, you can start chanting. But suppose previous day you have just, you know, you have attended nature's call, you have passed stool and you have not taken bath after that, then you are in an impure state. So you have to take bath, you know, immediately, you know, the next day when you get up. So that's what devotees do. So devotees, as soon as they go to bathroom, they attend nature's call, that is they pass stool, passing water is okay. You know, we just hand wash our hands and legs. But when it comes to passing stool, it's more gross. So, you know, we take bath immediately. So like this, when the cleanliness is maintained, next day, you know, you can just wash your hands and legs and you can start chanting. So that's the only prerequisite, nothing else. Can we keep kirtan while chanting? If we keep kirtan while chanting, how will we hear our own voice? Yes, we'll get immersed, you know, in kirtan. So it's not recommended. It should be peaceful. The setup should be peaceful. Sometimes I've seen devotees play lecture. Sometimes devotees read also while chanting. Chanting is exclusive activity. Chanting is like talking with Krishna. That is chanting. So now when we're talking with Krishna, then how can we hear someone else not talking? How can we do some other activity? Right? So in this way, you know, what we do in chanting is we have to keep our setup calm, stable, peaceful. And then we have to sit for chanting, understanding it's an exclusive activity. I cannot include anything in this time. Let's not, you know, push in different activities during the time of chanting. Yes. Or push in chanting during different activities. No. It's an exclusive activity. When you're giving 2 hours, you have to just, you know, be 2 hours chanting. That's it. No activity in between. Right. So something like that. So no kirtan, no lecture, no reading, no watching any video or whatever. Max to max, what we can do is we can have a photo of Krishna in front of us. And looking at that photo, we can just chant. More than that, no moving animated Krishna movies or you know, some nice dancing kirtan. No. So something like that. Stable environment. Please remember this word, stable environment. Yes. Okay, so, okay, one more question. Okay, this is the last question for the day. Many times I happen to hear the lectures of Gaur Gopal Prabhu. Are they as per parampara? Yeah, Gaur Gopal Prabhu is an ISKCON devotee. He's a very nice devotee. But one thing is there that Gaur Gopal Prabhu, in fact, he was my mentor when I was back in Mumbai. So, he is very intense in his devotional service. But he has taken a service of giving sessions to non-devotees. That is a service that he has taken. So whatever sessions he is giving, he is not talking about bhakti in that. He is just talking about how to live in this world. Okay. So now when it comes to this talk of how to live in this world is not very important for devotees. Yes. So when it comes to Prabhuji's lectures, yes, we can pass it on to non-devotees and let them hear and get connected, you know, to a sadhu, or like sadhu like, you know, himself. But when it comes to devotees, you know, we should hear intense bhakti lectures. No, not day-to-day activity lectures. So Prabhu's lectures are more on how to maintain relationship, how to manage time and this and that. So that's okay. You know? But more important is how can I become more intense in bhakti. Such lectures we have to hear. So yes, you can still hear. You know, he's in Parampara. He's our very dear ISKCON devotee.